I think about the fact that I've heard people say that people are willing to follow somebody and do things that they otherwise wouldn't do if they trust the person that they're following. If they really believe that the person that they're following is doing what is right in the moment, they will follow and do what they're told. But I also think about the opposite, that there are a lot of times that people won't do simply what they are told because, well, there are times we need a leader instead of a teller. I was thinking back on my own life, and I remember I played sports throughout junior high and high school and on into college, and I had many different coaches in that 7-8 year period of my life. But I remember one of them in particular. And I don't remember him necessarily because we had the best teams, or we were able to do things that maybe we otherwise wouldn't. In fact, I had another coach that took us there. But I remember this one because he was my coach in several different sports. He was my track coach, and probably I remember him most in that role because he would run with us. Most of the days he would run along with us in track. But he was my basketball coach, and there were a lot of days when we would go to do the training, not drills for basketball, but do training, and he would run the same drills that we were running. It was part of who he was. And I remember the year he was my football coach, he would run. We would run up and down the field, and he would run with us. I think he was taunting us sometimes, but you don't want to think that about a coach and a poor junior high boy. But I remember him a lot, and I respected him a lot because he would do what we were doing. He was a leader. And I think as I read through the life of Jesus, I think that Jesus sees the same principle in being God understood the way he created us, but he understands that principle, and that's why when Jesus chooses to describe himself, he uses a picture, and he says, "I am the good shepherd." He doesn't say a lot of other things, but he moves his audience beyond telling them what he wants them to do. And in fact, that's part of the great imagery of the Judean shepherd, is the shepherd leads the sheep. The shepherd goes before the sheep and does what he wants the sheep to do. He goes where he wants the sheep to go. And Jesus is showing his disciples that he loves them, that he cares for them, that he's showing them what he wants them to do, and in part, or therefore, showing us not exactly how we are going to live, but he shows us what it looks like to live in a relationship with God and with one another. And for the second week in a row, we're looking at a section of scripture from John chapter 10, where that is the image, that is the picture that Jesus gives us. The picture of the Judean shepherd. And so this morning we're picking up at John chapter 10, verse 10, where we left off at the end of last week. And as we do, we're going to see two contrasting pictures that Jesus gives us. And so let's turn to what John records for us as this conversation between Jesus and a crowd of followers continues. He says, "The thief comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep, so when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and run away." Sheep. Don't you like that? Making my own plural of the plural sheep. Anyways, "Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." At these words, the Jews were again divided. Many of them said, "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" We're going to see two pictures, and in the end, I think between the two pictures, we can see why we can trust Jesus and why we should follow him. It begins with the picture of a shepherd, and Jesus moves from describing the shepherd that the sheep will follow and the sheep pen and the protection the shepherd provides to saying he is the good shepherd. He is the good shepherd. Now, we could think about good in a lot of ways. I think of a good meal, you know, something that's hearty and tasty and that I didn't overcook. I think of a good car, one that's in sound condition and probably doesn't have many computers on it. Like only the ones I carry in my duffel bag, you know, right, Duffy? Yeah. He's waving his hand, so I know it's okay to ask him if that's right. I think of good, and we think of things that are in the condition that they're meant to be. I think about good, and I think about performing well. That was a good performance. I think about good as simply a modifier of other things, and it modifies in different ways, but the way that we should look at Jesus being the good shepherd is twofold. One, he is the shepherd who really cares. He is good in the fact that he cares for his sheep deeply. You know, last week we talked about the fact that the shepherd cares personally for the sheep. He knows them by name and he calls them by name. He doesn't just generally call, "Hey sheep, come here." He looks at each one and he calls them by name. He is the good shepherd. But also, he is good in the fact that he is the one that becomes the model. He is the one that reaches and attains a level of being a shepherd that is above and beyond any other. And he is the good shepherd. In so many ways, he becomes the model shepherd. But more than that, Jesus is saying that he is the good shepherd. He says, "You want to know that I am the good shepherd. You know that because I am willing to lay down my life for my sheep." Now, there is a difference between giving your life, as in you die for something, and being voluntarily giving your life. We give our lives to a lot of things, but Jesus is saying that he voluntarily is giving his life for his sheep. He's making a decision. He's looking forward. And because we know the rest of the story, because we have seen the story of Jesus from this side of the cross, it's easy for us to look and see that Jesus is talking about going to the cross and laying down his life. And we have seen and we've heard and we've read accounts of what was going through the body, the physical, the emotional pain of somebody who is dying on a cross. And so we understand what Jesus is facing because we look at it from this side of the cross. But we also have to look at it from Jesus' perspective on the other side of the cross. And it isn't just that he is going to die on the cross. It's that he is voluntarily, willfully, purposely, with intent, going to die on a Roman cross so that you and I don't have to. So that you and I don't have to pay the penalty of our sins. Jesus is going to die voluntarily, knowing what that means. Probably more than anybody else who knew that their day was coming to die on a cross, Jesus understood the pain and the anguish, the humiliation, the despair that he was going to face in that time on that cross. Because he's the one who gave you the ability to feel pain. He's the one who gave you the ability to have emotions. He's the one who gave you the ability to feel spiritual feelings. And Jesus says, as the good shepherd, he is going to take on death to take the present or the pressure off of the potential victims and to protect and to save them. This is the picture of a shepherd who knows that the wolf or the bear or the lion. You know, you think about David, King David, when he's getting ready to fight Goliath. What does he tell King Saul? Oh, this giant will be nothing because I've already faced the lion and the bear. Why? Not because it was fun or it gave him great standing in the little boys in the Bethlehem area. No, because he was protecting his sheep. He said, when the lion or the bear came to take my sheep, I took on and killed the lion and the bear. The good shepherd, Jesus says, steps between the danger and the sheep, and he takes on the danger knowing what will happen to him. And in this case, Jesus says he's going to step between the powers of death. Go back to verse 10. The thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Jesus says, I came so that they can have life. And then he says, and I'm going to lay down my life for my sheep. You and I get life because Jesus takes the opportunity to say, there is sin, there is death that they deserve. And he steps between you and me and the consequences of the sins that we have committed to protect us and to save us, even at the expense of his own life. And Jesus says, knowing all of that, I will lay down my life for my sheep. Jesus came to earth for the purpose of dying on a cross to pay the price for our sins. But then he says something else that seems almost out of place. If Jesus said he was going to die for his followers, well, okay, once in a while somebody would give their life to protect those they love. We can understand that feeling, especially as parents, we can understand that feeling. Those of us who are parents, don't you understand? Don't you remember? Don't you know that feeling that says, I would die for my children? I would take their pain and their sorrow and their heartache if I could, so they didn't have to. And it's one thing to say that I would die for someone, for Jesus to say he would die for his disciples, that he as the shepherd would die for his sheep. But you know what happens when a shepherd dies to protect the sheep? He's dead. And you know what happens after you're dead? They bury you and you stay dead. But Jesus makes this statement that I am sure was baffling to those who heard it, and it should be just as baffling to us. But the problem is we have become so accustomed to what Jesus says that it doesn't surprise us anymore. He said, I lay down my life that I can take it back up again. Jesus says, I am dying by my own decision so that I can have life a second time. That should shock us, because that's not normal. That is absolutely abnormal and not the way things work. But Jesus is making this prediction to his disciples. And just as in some of the other Gospels, he clearly spells out what is going to happen in his own way. In the book of John, he is describing the same circumstances, that he is going to die on the cross by his own choice, and that he will be buried, and in 3 days he will rise from the grave. Because he loves his sheep and he wants to bring them life. The contrast of this, Jesus goes back to these false shepherds, and he, throughout these verses in John chapter 10, he goes back and forth between the good shepherd and the bad shepherds. And he identifies the bad shepherds, and at one point he calls them a thief, and he says the thief comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. You see, what Jesus came to do for the sheep, the thief wants to do to the sheep. What Jesus came to provide, he came to provide as protection and life. The thief comes to destroy protection and to steal life. And as Jesus is talking to his followers there, you have to understand that some of this group that is following Jesus from place to place, from day to day, listening to his teaching, some of them were the 12 disciples. John never identifies them as that, but we know that they're there, the 12. But there's also this other group of followers who will be true to Jesus, the ones that Luke will later talk about as the 120. In the book of Acts, or 500 that Paul speaks about when he says that there were 500 brethren who saw the risen Lord. There are those groups, that group of people who are followers of Jesus. They're just not part of the disciples that Jesus has chosen. And then there appears to be just a crowd that gathers regularly. And some of them must be ones who come and go and come regularly to follow Jesus. And they are some of the religious leaders themselves. And Jesus looks at the religious leaders among the crowd. And he says, you guys are thieves. And he goes back to the prophetic word and probably likely Ezekiel 34, where God says through the prophet Ezekiel, that the shepherds that he, God has appointed to take care of his sheep are simply fleecing the flock. They're stealing the wool, and when they've gotten all the wool they think they're going to get, they kill the sheep, and they don't do what they're supposed to when they kill the sheep. They simply keep it all for themselves. They don't offer it to God like they're supposed to. They don't share it with their brothers in the priesthood and the other Levites, but no, they kill the sheep and they keep all the benefit for themselves. And Jesus looks out there and he says, the thief, the under-shepherds are simply here to fleece the flock, to take from the flock what they can. And they instead of protecting the flock when the thief come, when the wild animals come, Jesus says, when the difficulty comes, they hightail it out of there. The first sign that things may not be going well, the thief, the hired hand, turns and runs. After all, it's one thing for me to be a shepherd and watch your sheep. That's good. But I'm not going to do the dangerous things, and I'm not going to chance giving up my life for somebody else's sheep. And so the sheep, or the false shepherds, they run. And as Jesus is calling this group of people the false shepherds, in context, one of the things that he is saying about them is that they don't recognize him as the shepherd, as the chief shepherd, as the owner of the sheep. They think that the sheep belong to them. They think that the sheep are theirs and nobody had better touch their sheep. And that's part of the contention that Jesus has with the religious leaders of his day. Is the fact that instead of caring for the sheep and protecting the sheep for God, they believe that they are the shepherds and everybody should answer to them, and they have taken possession of something that isn't theirs. And Jesus says that they are the shepherds, the false shepherds that the prophets of the Old Testament were speaking of, or false prophets in the line of the spiritual leaders at the time that prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel were writing. And so he's making this comparison and this contrast between the two shepherds. He's saying, you guys are the false shepherds. Be careful, sheep, who you follow. These guys are the false shepherds. And then he makes this statement that equates himself with God. Because if you go back and you look at passages like Ezekiel 34, you find that God is saying that he is the true shepherd. And when Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, he is taking the title and the role that was God's. Jesus is the good shepherd who owns the sheep, to whom the under-shepherds must give or yield authority and possession. So Jesus gives us the pictures of the two sheep, and or the two shepherds, and he's saying, you can see that this shepherd, the good shepherd, is the one that's worth following. And then he gives us another comparison and another contrasting picture. And that is the picture of two sheepfolds, or two herds of sheep, or flocks of sheep. Yeah, I think flocks is probably the right term, but my brain always says herds first. I'm used to herds of cattle. I'm not used to sheep. But anyway, you've got these two flocks of sheep, these two pens, these two sheepfolds of sheep, and Jesus says that there are two groups. And the first group, he acknowledges, are some of the people that he's talking to. You guys are, in the way Jesus is speaking, you guys are the first pen of sheep, the first flock of my sheep. And those that Jesus was speaking to were Jews. They were the Jews of Jesus' day. The Judean Jews, those Jews that were there, they lived in the region where Jesus was preaching and teaching for 3.5 years. Those Jews that would have heard Jesus and maybe seen Jesus on a regular basis, and they knew what his message was. But I think Jesus was also talking about the larger group of Jews. The Jews that we might say lived in the diaspora. The ones who had been dispersed and lived throughout the world, and who only occasionally were able to make it back to Jerusalem. In fact, many of them probably only made it once to celebrate one of the great feasts because of the distance of travel and the cost. But either way, whether you're talking about those that were in Judea or those that were in spread throughout the rest of the world, Jesus is speaking about those Jews as the one of the two flocks. And that's the flock that the religious leaders would have recognized. They believed that they were the flock of God, and heavy emphasis on the. That three-letter word, the. And in that, Jesus was speaking not of just the faithful Jews, but the faithful and the unfaithful. Those that were remembering the covenant that they had with God and those that were very slack. They were one shepherd. And they were governed by other shepherds on behalf of God. And some of them were good and some of them were bad. And Jesus isn't saying that all of the under shepherds were bad. I mean, we look at the shepherds that Jesus or God chose, and you've got men like Moses and Joshua and David and some of the kings following David. But then you've got some of the bad shepherds, and you think about the two sons of the prophet or the priest, high priest Eli, who were stealing meat and running wild with the women at the temple. Think about kings like Manasseh, who says, the scripture says, that the dude was evil through and through. And you think about some of the spiritual leaders that Jeremiah and Ezekiel especially called out shortly before the Babylonian captivity. But whatever the case, Jesus is looking at these sheep and these shepherds, and he's saying, some of you guys will follow. And you're my sheep. And some of you won't. Even though you think you belong with this flock, you don't. And you will not follow. But then Jesus says, I have another flock. I have another group of sheep who belong to me, who are not part of this flock, but they're a part of my greater flock. And when Jesus says that, he's referring to the Gentiles. Basically, you have this group. You have two groups. You have the Jews and not the Jews, okay? The descendants of Abraham by physical lineage through Isaac and Jacob, the Jews, and the not Jews, which is everybody else, including Abraham's descendants through Ishmael. So, Gentiles. And we know that Jesus or God was looking to include the Gentiles from the very beginning, because God speaks to Abram and he says, all and through your offspring, all the nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. Through your offspring, not just your offspring, but all the nations. And so even from the beginning, even from the very beginning, when God made this promise, this agreement with Abram, his purpose was to bring all of the nations into his family and into his blessing. Or again, Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, chapter 49, verse 6, he says, or it says, he says, "Is it too small a thing for you to be my servant, to restore the tribes of Jacob, and to bring back those of Israel I have kept? And hear this, I will also make you a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth." To the nations, to everybody that isn't the Jews, God says through the prophet Isaiah that they will be his flock. And so we have these pictures of these two sheepfolds, these two flocks of sheep. And Jesus says, "I am going to bring them together and I am going to merge them into one. And I am going to call out my own sheep and my sheep will follow me. And then I will have one pen of sheep." And it's all who will call upon him. Don't have time, but if you have time later, read through what Paul writes to the church at Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 16, because he talks about the fact that Jesus came to make us one people, to break down the wall between the Jews and the Gentiles. And there is one flock. There's one group of people, all who will call upon him. And in John, he says, when the Son of Man is lifted up, everyone will have the opportunity to come to him, because all men will see him. And when Jesus says this, he's making a statement that's not that dissimilar from what he says just before he leaves the earth, whether it's Matthew in a room with just the disciples, when he says, "Go and make disciples of all the nations," all the nations, or whether it's just before he is ascending into heaven, out in the open with mainly his disciples, and he says to them, "And you will be my witnesses, first in Jerusalem and then in Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth," where Jesus says, "You will be my witness to Jews and non-Jews and everyone who calls upon the Lord will be saved." Blank slide, Tracy. I find it interesting that Jesus could have used a lot of imagery for himself and his followers. He could have used the picture of a general and his army. With the general telling the people where to go and what to do, but you know, not everybody listens well to a general. And it surely is not as relational as a shepherd leading his sheep. He could have used a more intimate picture, and he could have used the picture of a teacher and a student. But too often, that's not about the relationship. It's more about the passing on of information from one person to the next. He could have used a coach and a team, but a shepherd really has a lot more skin in the game than a coach. Unless, of course, you happen to remember one of those few happy player coaches that are out there. But instead, when Jesus chooses his primary metaphor, it is a shepherd and a sheep. Because there is a level of trust. There is a level of trust that the sheep have in their shepherd. They trust their shepherd to provide everything for them. They trust the shepherd is going to lead them safely, even through difficulties. And they trust that the shepherd is going to see that everyone arrives safely at the destination. You see, we have this great shepherd who called you and me. Even though we weren't the descendants of Abraham physically, he called us to be a part of his flock. He called us to be his sheep. Will you follow the shepherd who cares for you